Chapter 120. Taking advice, when it became known to the Britons on the shore of the Yellow Tiber that their intelligent compatriot, Mr. Sparkler, was made one of the lords of their circumlocution office, they took it as a piece of news with which they had no nearer concern than with any other piece of news, any other accident or offense in the English papers. Some laughed, some said, by way of complete excuse, that the post was virtually a sinecure, and any fool who could spell his name was good enough for it. Some, and these the more solemn political oracles, said that Decimus did wisely to strengthen himself, and that the sole constitutional purpose of all places within the gift of Decimus was that Decimus should strengthen himself. A few bilious Britons there were who would not subscribe to this article of faith, but their objection was purely theoretical. In a practical point of view, they listlessly abandoned the matter, as being the business of some other Britons unknown, somewhere, or nowhere. In like manner, at home, great numbers of Britons maintained, for as long as 24 consecutive hours, that those invisible and anonymous Britons ought to take it up. Apostrophe, and that, if they quietly acquiesced in it, they deserved it. But of what class the remiss Britons were composed, and where the unlucky creatures hid themselves, and why they hid themselves, and how it constantly happened that they neglected their interests, when so many other Britons were quite at a loss to account for their not looking after those interests, was not, either upon the shore of the Yellow Tiber, or the shore of the Black Thames, made apparent to men. Mrs. Myrtle circulated the news, as she received congratulations on it, with a careless grace that displayed it to advantage, as the setting displays the jewel. Yes, she said, Edmund had taken the place. Mr. Myrtle wished him to take it, and he had taken it. She hoped Edmund might like it, but really she didn't know. It would keep him in town a good deal, and he preferred the country. Still, it was not a disagreeable position, and it was a position. There was no denying that the thing was a compliment to Mr. Myrtle, and was not a bad thing for Edmund, if he liked it. It was just as well that he should have something to do, and it was just as well that he should have something for doing it. Whether it would be more agreeable to Edmund than the army remained to be seen. Thus the bosom, accomplished in the art of seeming to make things of small account, and really enhancing them in the process. While Henry Gowan, whom Decimus had thrown away, went through the whole round of his acquaintance between the gate of the people and the town of Albano, vowing, almost but not quite, with tears in his eyes, that Sparkler was the sweetest-tempered, simplest-hearted, altogether most lovable jackass that ever grazed on the public common, and that only one circumstance could have delighted him, Gowan, more than his the beloved jackass's getting this post, and that would have been his, Gowan's, getting it himself. He said it was the very thing for Sparkler. There was nothing to do, and he would do it charmingly. There was a handsome salary to draw, and he would draw it charmingly. It was a delightful, appropriate, capital appointment. And he almost forgave the donor his slight of himself, in his joy that the dear donkey for whom he had so great an affection was so admirably stabled. Nor did his benevolence stop here. He took pains, on all social occasions, to draw Mr. Sparkler out, and make him conspicuous before the company. And, although the considerate action always resulted in that young gentleman's making a dreary and forlorn mental spectacle of himself, the friendly intention was not to be doubted. Unless, indeed, it chanced to be doubted by the object of Mr. Sparkler's affections. Miss Fanny was now in the difficult situation of being universally known in that light, and of not having dismissed Mr. Sparkler, however capriciously she used him. Hence, she was sufficiently identified with the gentleman to feel calm promised by his being more than usually ridiculous, and hence, being by no means deficient in quickness, she sometimes came to his rescue against Gowan, and did him very good service. But, while doing this, she was ashamed of him, undetermined whether to get rid of him, or more decidedly encourage him, distracted with apprehensions that she was every day becoming more and more immersed in her uncertainties, and tortured by misgivings that Mrs. Myrtle triumphed in her distress. With this tumult in her mind, it is no subject for surprise that Miss Fanny came home one night in a state of agitation from a concert and ball at Mrs. Myrtle's house, and on her sister affectionately trying to soothe her, pushed that sister away from the toilet table at which she sat angrily trying to cry, and declared with a heaving bosom that she detested everybody, and she wished she was dead. "Dear Fanny, what is the matter? Tell me." "Apostrophe, matter, you little mole," apostrophe said Fanny. "If you were not the blindest of the blind, you would have no occasion to ask me. The idea of daring to pretend to assert that you have eyes in your head, and yet ask me what's the matter. Apostrophe, apostrophe, is it Mr. Sparkler, dear? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Sparkler." Apostrophe, apostrophe, repeated Fanny, with unbounded scorn, as if he were the last subject in the solar system that could possibly be near her mind. "No, Miss Bat, it is not." Apostrophe, immediately afterwards, she became remorseful for having called her sister names, declaring with sobs that she knew she made herself hateful, but that everybody drove her to it. "I don't think you are well tonight, dear Fanny." Apostrophe, stuff and nonsense. Apostrophe, apostrophe, replied the young lady, turning angry again. "I am as well as you are. Perhaps I might say better, and yet make no boast of it." Apostrophe, poor little Dorrit, not seeing her way to the offering of any soothing words that would escape repudiation, deemed it best to remain quiet. At first, Fanny took this ill too, protesting to her looking glass that of all the trying sisters a girl could have, she did think the most trying sister was a flat sister. That she knew she was at times a wretched temper, that she knew she made herself hateful, that when she made herself hateful, nothing would do her half the good as being told so, but that, being afflicted with a flat sister, she never was told so, and the consequence resulted that she was absolutely tempted and goaded into making herself disagreeable. Besides, she angrily told her looking glass, she didn't want to be forgiven. It was not a right example that she should be constantly stooping to be forgiven by a younger sister. And this was the art of it, that she was always being placed in the position of being forgiven, whether she liked it or not. Finally she burst into violent weeping, and, when her sister came and sat close at her side to comfort her, said, "Amy, you're an angel." Apostrophe, apostrophe, but, I tell you what, my pet, apostrophe said Fanny, when her sister's gentleness had calmed her, "it now comes to this, that things cannot and shall not go on as they are at present going on, and that there must be an end of this, one way or another." Apostrophe, as the announcement was vague, though very peremptory, little Dorrit returned, "Let us talk about it." Apostrophe, "quite so, my dear," apostrophe assented Fanny, as she dried her eyes. "Let us talk about it. I am rational again now, and you shall advise me. Will you advise me, my sweet child?" Apostrophe, even Amy smiled at this notion, but she said, "I will, Fanny, as well as I can." Apostrophe, "thank you, dearest Amy," apostrophe returned Fanny, kissing her. "You are my anchor." Apostrophe, having embraced her anchor with great affection, Fanny took a bottle of sweet toilet water from the table and called to her maid for a fine handkerchief. She then dismissed that attendant for the night, and went on to be advised, dabbing her eyes and forehead from time to time to cool them. "My love," apostrophe Fanny began, "our characters and points of view are sufficiently different, kiss me again, my darling, to make it very probable that I shall surprise you by what I am going to say. What I am going to say, my dear, is that notwithstanding our property, we labor, socially speaking, under disadvantages. You don't quite understand what I mean, Amy?" apostrophe apostrophe, I have no doubt I shall, apostrophe said Amy, mildly, after a few words more. Apostrophe, well, my dear, what I mean is, that we are, after all, newcomers into fashionable life. Apostrophe, I am sure, Fanny, apostrophe little Dorrit interposed in her zealous admiration, no one need find that out in you. Apostrophe, well, my dear child, perhaps not, apostrophe said Fanny, though it's most kind and most affectionate in you, you precious girl, to say so. Apostrophe here she dabbed her sister's forehead, and blew upon it a little. But you are, apostrophe resumed Fanny, as is well known, the dearest little thing that ever was. To resume, my child. Pa's extremely gentlemanly, and extremely well informed, but he is, in some trifling respects, a little different from other gentlemen of his fortune. Partly on account of what he has gone through, poor dear. Partly, I fancy, on account of it's often running in his mind, that other people are thinking about that, while he is talking to them. Uncle, my love, is altogether unpresentable. Though a dear creature to whom I am tenderly attached, he is, socially speaking, shocking. Edward is frightfully expensive and dissipated. I don't mean that there is anything ungenteel in that itself, far from it, but I do mean that he doesn't do it well, and that he doesn't, if I may so express myself, get the money's worth in the sort of dissipated reputation that attaches to him. Apostrophe, poor Edward. Apostrophe, apostrophe, sighed little Dorrit, with the whole family history in the sigh. Yes. And poor you and me too, apostrophe returned Fanny, rather sharply. Very true. Then, my dear, we have no mother, and we have a Mrs. General. And I tell you again, darling, that Mrs. General, if I may reverse a common proverb, and adapt it to her, is a cat in gloves who will catch mice. That woman, I am quite sure and confident, will be our mother-in-law. Apostrophe, I can hardly think, Fanny apostrophe Fanny stopped her. Now, don't argue with me about it, Amy, apostrophe said she, because I know better. Apostrophe feeling that she had been sharp again, she dabbed her sister's forehead again, and blew upon it again. To resume once more, my dear. It then becomes a question with me.
I am proud and spirited, Amy, as you very well know. Too much so, I dare say, whether I shall make up my mind to take it upon myself to carry the family through.
Apostrophe how? Apostrophe apostrophe asked her sister, anxiously. I will not, apostrophe said Fanny, without answering the question, submit to be mother-in-law by Mrs. General, and I will not submit to be, in any respect whatever, either patronized or tormented by Mrs. Myrtle. Apostrophe, little Dorrit laid her hand upon the hand that held the bottle of sweet water, with a still more anxious look. Fanny, quite punishing her own forehead with the vehement dabs she now began to give it, fitfully went on. That he has somehow or other, and how is of no consequence, attained a very good position, no one can deny. That it is a very good connection, no one can deny. And as to the question of clever or not clever, I doubt very much whether a clever husband would be suitable to me. I cannot submit. I should not be able to defer to him enough. Apostrophe, oh, my dear Fanny. Apostrophe, apostrophe, expostulated little Dorrit, upon whom a kind of terror had been stealing as she perceived what her sister meant. If you loved anyone, all this feeling would change. If you loved anyone, you would no more be yourself, but you would quite lose and forget yourself in your devotion to him. If you loved him, Fanny apostrophe Fanny had stopped the dabbing hand and was looking at her fixedly. Oh, indeed. Apostrophe apostrophe cried Fanny. Really? Bless me, how much some people know of some subjects. They say everyone has a subject, and I certainly seem to have hit upon yours, Amy. There, you little thing, I was only in fun, apostrophe dabbing her sister's forehead. But don't you be a silly puss, and don't you think flightily and eloquently about degenerate impossibilities. There. Now, I'll go back to myself. apostrophe, dear Fanny, let me say first, that I would far rather we worked for a scanty living again than I would see you rich and married to Mr. Sparkler. Apostrophe, let you say, my dear? Apostrophe, retorted Fanny. Why, of course, I will let you say anything. There is no constraint upon you, I hope. We are together to talk it over. And as to marrying Mr. Sparkler, I have not the slightest intention of doing so tonight, my dear, or tomorrow morning either. Apostrophe, but at some time? Apostrophe, at no time, for anything I know at present, apostrophe answered Fanny, with indifference. Then, suddenly changing her indifference into a burning restlessness, she added, you talk about the clever men, you little thing. It's all very fine and easy to talk about the clever men, but where are they? I don't see them anywhere near me. Apostrophe, my dear Fanny, so short a time, apostrophe, short time or long time, apostrophe interrupted Fanny. I am impatient of our situation. I don't like our situation, and very little would induce me to change it. Other girls, differently reared and differently circumstanced altogether, might wonder at what I say or may do. Let them. They are driven by their lives and characters. I am driven by mine. Apostrophe, Fanny, my dear Fanny, you know that you have qualities to make you the wife of one very superior to Mr. Sparkler. Apostrophe, Amy, my dear Amy, apostrophe retorted Fanny, parodying her words, I know that I wish to have a more defined and distinct position, in which I can assert myself with greater effect against that insolent woman. Apostrophe, would you therefore forgive my asking, Fanny therefore marry her son? Apostrophe, why, perhaps, apostrophe said Fanny, with a triumphant smile. There may be many less promising ways of arriving at an end than that, my dear. That piece of insolence may think, now, that it would be a great success, to get her son off upon me, and shelve me. But, perhaps, she little thinks how I would retort upon her, if I married her son. I would oppose her in everything, and compete with her. I would make it the business of my life. Apostrophe, Fanny set down the bottle, when she came to this, and walked about the room, always stopping and standing still while she spoke. One thing I could certainly do, my child. I could make her older. And I would. Apostrophe, this was followed by another walk. I would talk of her as an old woman. I would pretend to know if I didn't, but I should from her son all about her age. And she should hear me say, Amy, affectionately, quite dutifully and... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.